In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yeah. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us in studio. Pass the Popcorn brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Greetings, Alan.
Hello. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, a lot of that going around, I think.
You had the funk there for a couple of weeks, right?
I did, and it was for a good couple of weeks where I was just like down for the count.
And your bride's not feeling well.
Well, I have a sneaking suspicion that it may be what I had has moved on to her. So she had a long weekend and was dealing with some stuff today. Although I think she's on the rebound. She's on the mend.
Oh, good.
So
well, I'm glad to hear that.
I think she's going to be better going forward. But again, it's just the worst because you sit there and all you want to do is help and there's literally nothing you can do.
Right.
You know, so it's just like, you just sort of wave your hands and just be, and you're just like, I love you and will do anything that maybe if anything comes to you that you think might help, please let me know. And I will happily contribute in whatever way that I can.
And that's what Carrie said to me when I came in today. I feel about the same.
Yeah.
Somehow, though, you managed to get yourself and probably drag Sheridan to three movies this weekend.
Yep. I went to three. Sheridan, bless her heart, did two out of the three with me because I'm kind of the worst and I don't like doing things by myself. And so, she's the one who's got to be along for the ride. So
curling up in a comfy movie seat.
Well, I mean, especially now with the new recliners,
right,
it's just like,
right.
you know, cuddle up underneath your coat, and it's like, well, you know, if I see the whole movie, great. If not, oh, well, it doesn't really matter.
I'm not writing the review. He is. So where should we begin on your trifecta of fun?
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, usually when there's a threesome like this, like, there's usually one that's pretty, like, brutal. Like, but that's not necessarily the case this time.
Good.
We'll go in ascending order. We'll start... The low point of the weekend, such as it was the Charlie's Angels movie, which, again, I need to say this up front. It's better than it has any right to be. I mean, it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it is far more entertaining and far more fun than I certainly expected. And I imagine it's going to be the same for a lot of people. It's not a reboot. It is a sequel to the films from the early aughts. I believe it was Charlie's Angels in 2000 and Charlie's Angels Full Throttle in, I believe, 2003. Those movies starred Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu, which were in turn a sequel to the TV show. And so the lineage continues. This one is written and directed by Elizabeth Banks.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, who also stars in the movie. This is her first feature screenplay. She's directed a couple of features before, but this is her first screenplay. And you can kind of tell, like, she's someone who has a sense of humor that she brings to the table that is pretty distinct, I think. And that's very prominent throughout this movie. The plot, such as it is, you've got... The Townsend Agency has in the years since the previous movies greatly expanded, and is now an international operation funded by vocally appearing only Charlie, who's no longer voiced by John Forsythe because he passed away actually about 10 years ago now. So, yeah, and so you've got this this group. There's Kristen Stewart stars as she's Sabina, not Sabrina, Sabina.
Okay.
And then there's a young woman. I'd never seen her before, but she was actually quite good. Plays a role, Jane, and she's Ella Balinska is her name. I was unfamiliar. She's done some BBC television stuff, but I hadn't really seen her in a movie before. They're basically, we meet them, they've teamed up to take down a sort of high-end like financial criminal in Brazil, and there's a big action set piece, and at the end our Bosley walks in. It's Patrick Stewart.
Well, that's not so bad.
Which is pretty great. We jump to Bosley's return to the palatial Townsend Agency estate for his retirement party. And this is where we learn that Bosley is a title, not a name.
What?
There are multiple Bosleys.
Okay.
Which is something that I would, it wouldn't have even occurred to me. But there's, you know, you've got, you've got Paris Bosley, who's played by Jimin Hansu. There's a couple of sort of like they come in via video, multiple Bosleys, including Michael Strahan. Michael Strahan is a Bosley.
All right.
Because of course he is.
Sure, why not?
And the one who's sort of taking the reins for running the whole show is Elizabeth Banks is a Bosley. And so she's I sort of assumed it would be like a sort of a familial like father daughter thing. Nope, they just call everybody Bosley, okay. Which is hysterical and also kind of it's a clever touch. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you're talking about trying to sort of expand the universe a little bit. So meanwhile, there's a young lady by the name of Elena, who played by Naomi Scott. She's a programmer, tech something. It's never really made clear what she does, but she works for this this tech company and has developed this sort of it's basically a MacGuffin. It's this like this alternative clean energy doodad that's like about yay big, but it'll power a building. And you know, they never go into the particulars because it doesn't make a lick of sense if you dig into it at all. But there are some problems with it, including the fact that it could potentially be weaponized. Mm-hmm. She brings her concerns to her immediate supervisor, played by Nat Faxon, who I hadn't seen in a while. It was nice to see him sort of turn out. But she's her concerns are dismissed, and she's sort of left to wonder what's going on. She decides she needs help. She winds up making contact with the Townsend Agency, including French Bosley, Jimin Hansu. Before you know it, people are trying to kill her. Like, just, like, guns and car chases and all sorts of craziness. And, and so she's left to she gets sort of taken under the wing of Sabina and Jane, the aforementioned angels. And they basically have to try to figure out how to protect Elena while also keeping this device, codenamed Callisto, out of the wrong hands, as it were. And that's pretty much how it goes. There are a couple of twisted turns throughout, but they're pretty pretty easily determined ahead of time. Like they broadcast it a little bit.
Now the series was called by some at the time Jiggle Television.
Sure,
you can't do that here in 2019. So have they brought it into the more modern era?
It's there's definitely that sort of empowerment kind of vibe to it. There's a lot less of the TNA kind of stuff. Mm. These are all very very intelligent, very capable women who also happen to look very good in evening wear, such as it is. But it's it's fun. It's funny. The action set pieces are pretty solid. There's some good jokes, a couple of good running gags. And the fact that this is sort of Elizabeth Banks has never really done a project like this, and for her to handle it as well as she has, it's pretty impressive. The casting, it's good. I've been on record for a long time as someone who was sort of disparaging of Kristen Stewart's talents. And I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. I think she was undone by a lot of early choices that she made in terms of the work that she was doing. And I think subsequent years have shown us that she, along with her Twilight co-star Robert Pattinson, they're both far more talented than those movies ever gave us any indicator. And you know, and that's on me. That's on all the rest of the critics out there who couldn't see past the material or whatever. She's great in this. Like, she's very charming. She seems very comfortable in this sort of action-oriented stuff, but she's also got a great sense of humor. And that's one of the things about the movie as a whole. Like, everybody's clearly having a good time, and that goes a long way towards making, especially a movie like this one, work. So yeah, I mean, is it great cinema? No. But are you going to have a decent time? Yeah. You're like, if the idea of seeing a movie called Charlie's Angels appeals to you to begin with, like, you're not going to be disappointed.
All right. One down, two to go. What's up next?
We'll talk about The Good Liar. You know, speaking of movies where you can clearly tell the people involved are having a good time. Like, look, man, you could put Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren at a table and have them read the phone book to each other for 2 hours, and I'm going to watch that. I mean, they're so incredibly talented, and they have they so clearly have such a real affection for one another and a respect for one another. Like, they like each other personally, and they respect each other professionally, and you combine that, and you basically give them carte blanche to just go and to just – to just be in a movie like this. It's really a kind of a delight. And again, you don't see movies like this really as much. Like, it's not like some sort of, like, you know, IP blockbuster, but it's not a movie that's out there trying to win awards either. Like, right. it's just your grown-up thriller that happens to star people who are you know, of a certain age. And it's super fun. Like, it's Ian McKellen playing a con man who basically is using used online dating to connect with Helen Mirren, who's a retired history professor, and he wants to basically swindle her out of her life savings. And that's it? Really?
Yeah.
And that's all you need.
You don't need more. Let them go have fun.
You know what I mean? And we get, like, and there are bits where we sort of you know, we start to unpack just what kind of a guy Ian McKellen's character, Roy is his name, what kind of a guy he is. But he, yeah, it's he and his partner Vincent, who's played by Jim Carter, who's so great in Downton Abbey.
Love him.
And it's basically their whole deal is like, you know, long cons and grifts to relieve, you know, the crooked and naive of their money. Like, that's their whole deal. And so, you know, he's not a good dude. Not a good person. And so we get some glimpses of that. But we also get to see him sort of try to build this relationship with this woman, Betty, who, you know, who lost her husband about a year ago and is, you know, living in a house by herself and is just sort of trying to think about what happens next. And so the relationship sort of starts to build a little bit. Even though her grandson, Stephen, who's played by Russell Tovey, is very suspicious of Roy's motives. You know, she says, you know what, forget it. Like, it's none of your business. It's my business. It's my life, et cetera, et cetera. And the relationship sort of builds. But here's the thing. This is very much a twisty-turny kind of movie. Like, and you know, there's going to be a lot of deception. You know that going in.
Oh, yes.
Because of the nature of the characters. And some of the deceptions, it's like, oh, well, I mean, I see that coming a mile away. But there are a couple of really wild left turns that this movie takes. And it goes to a darker place than I think I was anticipating.
Hmm.
I'm not going to go into specifics because I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, it gets dark. Like, there are some narrative choices that are surprising. Some that are, you know, some that are telegraphed a mile away, and others that are, you're just like, wow, like, I literally did not expect that. But ultimately it's just two incredibly talented people, like, just up there doing their thing, having a good time, and really just leaning into, the idea of telling a story, you know. And it's a relatively, you know, you mentioned the twists and turns, but ultimately it's a fairly simple story.
Nice.
Fairly straightforward. The performances are obviously excellent. And it's, I mean, it's just a good time at the movies. It's a good low pressure time at the movies. Like, and it's the sort of movie that doesn't, it doesn't feel like it's reaching into your wallet or begging you for your acclaim. It's just content to just be and entertain. And again, there just aren't enough of those movies these days. So yeah, like here's to The Good Liar.
All right. And finally, I'm intrigued by this movie, and I'm not a car guy myself, but I heard an interview with Matt Damon, and he said, yeah, I'm not a car guy, but I really, when I read this, I was fascinated with the story of Carroll Shelby. And so I'm interested in this.
You know, I'm not a car guy either. And I wondered how that was going to impact the way I experienced Ford versus Ferrari. And it turns out it doesn't make a lick of difference, Rich, like not even a little bit. Like it's funny. I heard a snippet from an interview with James Mangold, who directed the film. You know, he's one of those guys who's done it all. You know, he's directed he's not really bound by genre like a lot of like sort of quote unquote mainstream directors are. But like he said, he's like, you know, car racing, it's not the theme of the movie. Car racing isn't a theme. You know, it's just a setting. It's a backdrop.
Right.
You know, and it's like, and he's like, he compared it to, because he did Walk the Line, and he compared it to that. He's like, country music is not a theme. Like, that's just not how it works. You know, and he's just like, you know, it's a chance to operate in a world, but it still boils down to the relationships between the people who exist in that world. For those who are unfamiliar, I'll just do a quick, in the mid-1960s, Ferrari sort of dominates the high performance automobile world. They win consistently the 24 hours at Le Mans race, which is sort of the be all end all of auto racing, high performance auto racing in that time. And a Ford executive by the name of Lee Iacocca, played by John Bernthal, goes to the boss, Henry Ford II, played by Tracy Letts, is basically like, you know what'll help us sell cars? If we put together a race team and win at Le Mans. Like, that's that will elevate our profile among the people who we needed elevated. And so he reaches out makes a couple of efforts before finally settling on Carroll Shelby, played by Matt Damon, who runs the Shelby American race team. He's the only, at that point, he's the only American driver to ever win at Le Mans. And so he's got that experience. And they're like, the folks at Ford are like, we want you to put together a race team. And he's like, okay. And so he brings in his friend slash mechanic slash driver, Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale, to help him design, build, and test a car that would potentially beat Ferrari at Le Mans. And they have to do all of this instead of having years to do this, they have basically like weeks. And so they get to it, and they put together a team, and they start building, and they start testing, and they start working toward creating a car that can compete on that playing field. And you know, that's kind of it as far as the story goes.
Right.
You know, and that's all you need. It's a wonderful look at a time, maybe you know, one of the last times when an individual through sheer force of will and, you know, and a sense of creativity and a desire to innovate and invent, could make a real impact in a corporate culture like that. Like, I mean, just the mere notion of something like that happening, you know, today, just ridiculous. Like it would never happen in a million years. So it's, this wonderful story of two men, the relationship between them, you know, the volatility of that relationship. Like, one of the big things over the course of the story is that certain executives at Ford don't particularly like Ken Miles. They don't think he's necessarily the guy they want as the face of Ford Motor Company, the Ford racing team. And so there's, you know, there's a pretty hard push to bring, put someone else in the driver's seat. And so that's an ongoing concern throughout the film. But again, it really comes down to Damon and Bale, who are just dynamite when they're on screen together, man. Like, some real, just compelling performance work. Like, it's been years since we've gotten something this good from Matt Damon. And that's not to say that Damon's work has been bad recently, but I mean, he really brings it. And he does it in a very low-key, like, sort of unshowy kind of way, which, when you're doing stuff with Bale, you have to do, because he's such a
right.
You know, he's such an explosive sort of actor. It's just you know, an oversized presence on screen to be able to sort of counterbalance that is a skill in and of itself, and it's one that Damon demonstrates beautifully. The interesting thing about this movie is with sports movies in general and racing movies specifically, there's a tendency toward like montage, like the idea to sort of create this sense of building towards a goal with, you know, snippets from various experiences going forward. Mangold doesn't do that. And instead he's like, you know, the only way to make this work for people who aren't car people is to really drop them into the experience. And so like, we spend close to 45 minutes in a single race in this movie. But it's very tight to the team outside the car, and it's very, very, you get this wonderful, like these wonderful stretches of the sort of, that sort of insular claustrophobic feeling that you must have like for these sort of endurance races, when it's just like, you're in a car for hours at a time and just driving these sort of lonely roads and never really knowing what's around the next corner and, whether something terrible is going to happen, like whether it's, you know, an external force or an internal force, you just don't know. And to sort of have that tension just building and building and building over this, this really extended stretch of film. It's such a ballsy move as a filmmaker. You know what I mean? To be like, you know what? I'm going to do this. You're going to watch it and you're going to love it. And it's just, and it's true. Like it's a real gamble, but it's one that pays off because it really sort of highlights the experience in ways that, you know, I don't like, you know, they start dropping car jargon and I'm like, I'm out. Like, I don't know what any of this stuff is.
Right.
Like, I barely know how to make my car go. let alone why it goes, like, but yeah, they find a way to sort of integrate all that stuff, and it's a wonderful movie about passion, about the idea of committing all of yourself to a goal that seems to be out of reach, that seems impossible, but going for it anyway. And and it features two exceptional performances that will undoubtedly receive a lot of conversation in the months going forward. In addition, like, Bernthal's great. Tracy Letts is phenomenal. Josh Lucas as one of the other sort of Ford execs. He's great. But it's just a fantastic cast. Movie's maybe a little longer than it needs to be, but at the same time, it's like, I'm all for spending time with people when they know what they're doing, and James Mangold, Matt Damon, and Christian Bale, those dudes know what they're doing.
All right, there you go. Alan Adams breaking it down for you on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
See you on Wednesday.
Yes, you will.